Familial Clinic, whatever you want to call it, is in a sense particularly relevant to our teams of Sanhedrin, because we have found ways to connect all our Yom Tovim to our Masechta, so we'll do that here as well. That when it comes to Chanukah, so Chanukah is a Drabanan. I'm trying to think of the right word, whether to call it a Yom Tov Drabanan, a Moed Drabanan. It's not really clear what the right word is, because we know that we have Yom Tovim that are in the HaTorah, and that have a status of Yom Tov. When it comes to Chanukah Purim, which are days which are Drabanan in a different way than Yom Tov Sheni is Drabanan. You know, Yom Tov Sheni is clearly a Yom Tov on a level of Drabanan. Chanukah and Purim are markedly different. We don't have a prohibition of Malacha on these days. And the Gemara identifies Malacha, prohibitions against Malacha, as a source of Kedusha for a day, Lo Ikdash Vesiyas Malacha. So it's not really clear whether Chanukah and Purim are days that have a defined entity. Are they Moedim? Are they Yom Tovim on a level of Rabbanan? Or are they normal days in which we have mitzvos, we have obligations? So that's a little bit of an open issue, which connects to the fact that it's coming at us at a level of Midr Rabbanan. But it's also particularly interesting that Chanukah is even more Drabanan than other Yom Tovim. It is particularly Masorah focused, is an interesting word. It's, as Rav Huttner pointed out in his essays, it is the Chag of Torah Shebaal Peh more than everything else. Because while we have Purim as the best parallel, Purim is also Midr Rabbanan. But Purim, we at least have a whole Masechta about. We have Masechus Megillah. And when it comes to Chanukah, so we have very substantive Gemaras in Masechus Shabbos. Maybe you've had a chance to begin to take a look. But we don't have a Masechta devoted to, and the Mishnayos do not take Chanukah on straightforward. Do not address Chanukah as its own topic, which is striking. It's not the case that Chanukah is never mentioned in Mishnah. That's not actually true. But we don't have Hilchos Chanukah dealt with systematically in the Mishnayos. And from that angle, it seems, this is a point that Rav Huttner made, that Chanukah is a uniquely Torah Shebaal Peh. That not only would it be conveyed to us only through the Mishnah and the Gemara because it's post-Tanakh, or it's post-Chumash, but even beyond that, it's not in the Torah Shebaal Peh sources that are most bichsad. So the Mishnah is written down first, and Chanukah is not written down there. Chanukah is not recorded, at least in terms of its head-on halachic treatment. And therefore, Chanukah is uniquely representative of the oral tradition, and of course, it centers around a fight to defend the rabbinic tradition. And therefore, Chanukah particularly, when we're taking a year out to learn about the authority of the Sanhedrin, about rabbinic authority, so Chanukah is an occasion to speak to us in a different way. And in fact, the Gemara, later on in this section, if you want to spend the next few Sunday mornings learning through all the Gemaras of Chanukah, you could certainly do worse. That would be a very good agenda for you. You should be able to cover all these Gemaras to spend the next few Sunday mornings on it, and you come into Chanukah much better informed. So the Gemara asks that this idea of reciting a bracha on Chanukah candles, Asher Kitshadam Mitzvosa Mitzivanu, Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, we recite a bracha that we have been commanded to light Chanukah candles. So asks the Gemara, Ohechan Sivanu. So where does it say that we've been commanded? How do you know that there is such a mitzvah? It's not in the Torah. So how could we articulate these words that God has commanded us to light Chanukah candles? And the Gemara has a couple of possible sources. One source is the pasuk that we discussed at some length of Lo Sasser, the pasuk in Parsha Shoftim. The Gemara also considers that it may be derived from She'al Avicha V'Yageicha. This Gemara appears in Chav Gimel Maralef. I don't know if any of you have Shabbos in front of you, but it's right before the lines get wide. So the Gemara says, "My mevarech, what bracha do you make? Mevarech asher hashem mitzvosim zivanu l'hakin shal Chanukah behechen zivanu. Where do we have such a commandment? Of Ivya Omar milos aser, Rabbi Nechemi Omer, Shalavicha v'yageircha z'chenecha v'yomru lach. So here the Gemara essentially is introducing the idea of reciting a bracha on mitzvah Rabbanan and telling us that it's connected to these general statements that we find in the Chumash itself. And as we discussed, Lo Sasser is a topic of great machlokis between the Rambam and the Ramban and others as to just how it conveys an obligation with the Rabbanan, or just how it allows for Chazal to innovate new laws. This Gemara seems like it might be, on the one hand, possibly a proof for the Rambam's position. There might be other ways to read this Gemara. It's a whole discussion. Yisrael?
So, would you say it's Ivano on even or mitzvot that they're one of Puranas?
So that's clearly the case. Right? It's clear that we say a bracha on Chanukah candles. It's clear that we say a bracha on reading the Megillah. It's clear that we say a bracha on Eruv.
So why don't you say it's Ivano?
So that's what this Gemara asks. That this Gemara says, how do we have the Tzivanu? How can we say that when it's not clear that God commanded us that? So here the Gemara gives this answer, either from Lo Sasser or from Shalavicha V'yageidcha. So what does that mean? That's the question. So what is the Gemara telling us that answer? So here it's interesting that even the Rambam differs with other Rishonim how to read this. Because the Rambam, we mentioned a few months ago, I guess at this point, that the Rambam understands this pasuk of Lo Sasser as the basis for rabbinic authority, the basis for the not only the judiciary authority, remember we discussed this, not only the judiciary authority that the rabbis can interpret the Torah in a binding way, but also legislative authority, that if the rabbis want to make a new law, so they're entitled to do that. And that was the Rambam's view, and the Ramban disagreed. The Ramban said you can't necessarily derive legislative authority, the ability to make new laws, from this pasuk. And this Gemara on the surface seems to be support for the Rambam's position. There's what to discuss in the various Rishonim how otherwise this Gemara could be read. But there is a distinction even within the Rambam, because the Ramban asks in the Rambam that if you're going to tell me that Lo Sasser is the source, so what right do we have to distinguish halachically between mitzvot d'oraisa and mitzvot d'rabbanan? So we know that we do make such distinctions, most prominently in the area of safek. And when it comes to a safek, we say safek d'rabbanan l'hakya and safek d'oraisa l'hakya. So what right do we have to make such distinctions if the Rambam's telling us that really all the Drabbanans are not only from the Torah, but they are really Surim in that Torah? They should be the most Machmir category. If you violate a Din Drabbanan, you're in violation of Lo Sasser. So most explain, Meshach Chachma has a famous passage about this, and others understand in this vein as well, that the Rambam doesn't mean to say that every Din Drabbanan is as if the Torah itself says it. It means that the general idea that we listen to rabbinic authority is because the Torah backs it up. The Torah has recognized the rabbis as authorities. So one could give a mashal. Just in a school context, it's easier to use this mashal. Let's say you have a teacher and you have a principal. So the principal empowers the teacher. If you're going to punch out your teacher, so you're going to have to answer to the principal. If you're going to cause a problem for the teacher, the principal's going to back them up. But you still understand that there's a difference between what the principal says and what the teacher says. You understand that there's a different level of authority, and they're not the same person saying the same thing. It's just that the principal has vested the teacher with authority, and that's why you have to listen to the teacher because of the principal's authority. So too, the Torah is declaring that the rabbi's authority exists. And if one would deny the very concept of rabbinic authority, then one would be running up against the Torah. And would have to answer to God, so to speak. But we still understand there's a difference between what the rabbis say and what God says. We understand that it's different levels. That's not an impossible concept to relate to. So that's probably the Rambam's view. And it's noteworthy that there are those, I believe the Smag, who do go further than the Rambam. And they understand actually more than that. That rabbinic authority is such that essentially does become a part of the Torah itself. So, for example, the Rambam writes when he puts out his Sefer HaMitzvos, and he gives rules for how he's going to count all the mitzvos. So the Rambam says that when he tries to figure out how you get 613, he says, I'm not going to count mitzvos that are the Rambam. I'm only going to count mitzvos that are in the Torah itself. So we understand that the Rambam's conveying this idea that I know that the mitzvos that are the Rambam are not a part of the 613 mitzvos and then Rabbisina. That's all part of one umbrella idea that we should follow the authority of Chazal, but not like that's actually in the text of the Torah. But there were among them only HaMitzvos, I believe the Smar, who did count Mitzvos Rabbanan as part of the 613. In other words, they're going further than the Rambam, on the other side of the Ramban. They're going further, and they're saying that not only is this rooted in Torah authority, but it becomes a part of the Torah itself.
Right. When the Gemara says that there are 613 mitzvos, it doesn't say there are 613 mitzvos there, right?
So, well, it says Nemru Losh Misina, so it depends how you interpret that. So the idea that they all somehow connect to Moshe's directive sounds like it's Misina. It sounds like essentially what he's saying is that it all becomes a part of the Iker Torah. So that machlokus, that difference between, say, the Rambam and the Smah, again, that's all on the other side of the Ramban. So that idea plays itself out in how you read this Gemara too. So when you say these words, Asher Kishonim Mitzvosa V'Tzivonu Lahadlik Ner Shal Chanukah, God commanded me to light Chanukah candles. So these other Rishonim would say, yeah, that's essentially how we relate to it. That because of the ability of Chazal to take on Torah authority, is essentially that God commanded us to light Chanukah candles. While the Rambam himself wouldn't say it that way. And the Rambam himself, if you look it up in Hilchos Brachos, so the Rambam says that how should we interpret this nusach that we use? Says the Rambam, it means Asher Kedushanu B'mitzvoso B'tzivanu L'shmoa El Eilu Shetzivanu L'hadlik Ner Shel Chanukah. So essentially saying it's an abbreviation the way we say it, and that really the idea is that we are recognizing that God commanded us in the general concept of rabbinic authority, and rabbinic authority means practically for us that we have to light Hanukkah candles. Daniel?
Didn't we already discuss this machloka when we said that the rabbis, when they tell us to go left, we go right?
Mm-hmm. We're definitely talking about this machloka.
It's in the Torah. So I'm saying, so we already had a maskara, no?
Well, in terms of machlokas the Rambam and the Ramban, I mean, it's ongoing machlokas, but here we're applying it in the context of Chanukah, and this Gemara is very relevant to understanding the whole structure of that. This is really the source. Chanukah is, first itself, uniquely the Rabbanan, and it's the context where the Gemara discusses its whole notion of reciting a bracha on a Rabbanan, and what that bracha means plugs into this whole question of how rabbinic authority works.
So if you believe that the Rabbanan don't have the ability, let's say, to make decrees, so what would this be then, the whole bracha from Chanukah?
So then, if they say they don't have authority at all, they have to say it comes from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Maybe Shalavicha V'Yageicha. You have to answer that question separately, because clearly everyone agrees when the Ramban was an Orthodox Jew also, right? That clearly the Ramban agrees that the authority to make Dinim D'Rabbanan exists. The only question is, how do you trace it back to the Torah? So you have a problem either way. The Ramban attacks the Rambam, saying that how can you distinguish between D'Rabbanans and D'Raisas according to your thesis. But if you don't accept the Rambam, the Ramban's a little harder, because clearly the Ramban believes in rabbinic authority and mitzvah D'Rabbanan, and you have to figure out then how. So that's a longer discussion than we'll have today. But just in the context of Chanukah, I want to call attention to this Gemara. Okay. So this is
Sorry. So how would the Ramban understand the bracha?
That when we have a mitzvah the Ramban, we have to practice it, so therefore that's also the language of Sivana was still relevant. Probably similar to the Rambam. You know, probably the Rambam's understanding shows that his opinion is not as different from the Ramban as the Ramban thinks. And basically, the Ramban is accusing him of saying that all mitzvos d'Rabbanan are essentially mitzvos d'Raisa. And the Rambam will say, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it means this. It means that we have to listen to rabbinic authority. And that means practically that we have to light Hanukkah candles. So in one sense, the Rambam's statement over there in Hilchos Brachos is a little bit his defense to the Rambam's questions. That don't put in such an extreme position in my mouth. I'm not actually saying that the Torah commands these specifically. I'm saying the Torah commands us to listen to rabbinic authority, and that practically results. So this happens to play an interesting role in one of the first sugyas that you find in Hanukkah. So this is a longer sugya, but I want to just discuss this briefly in the few minutes that we have. So the very opening sugya in Hanukkah, the very, very beginning, in Daf Chaf Aleph, if you look at the Gemaras today, so you saw this. So basically the first lines of the Hanukkah sugya combine at least three topics, which maybe we'll have time to discuss over the next few weeks, but I want to call attention to one of them today. So the Gemara says in the bottom of Chaf Aleph and Aleph, Amar Rav Huna, Silos Hashmanim, Sh'amar Chacham Mei Madlikim Hem B'Shabbos, and Madlikim Hem B'Chanukah, Bein B'Shabbos, Bein B'Chol. Right? So this Gemara, I had a chance to look at this a little bit this morning, that this is how Hanukkah sneaks itself into Masechah Shabbos, because the Gemara was talking about Neiros Shabbos, and talking about what candles and wicks we use and which ones we don't. We recite this every Friday night, Mishnah Yisimbo Madlikim. So the Gemara says, in that context, so the wicks and candles that have been identified as being weak and not yielding a strong flame, so you shouldn't use those for Shabbos. And here the first opinion says, you also shouldn't use them for Hanukkah, not for Shabbos Hanukkah, nor for weekdays. Now, Amar Rava, my time of the Rahuna. So Rava says, what's your foolish reason for saying that? Kasavar kafsa zakurkla. Because he combines two positions, which we'll see, we hold from neither of those. But his position is that we hold kavsa zakakla, meaning that if the candles go out after you lit them, this is a fascinating sugi, by the way, so if we didn't discuss this year, maybe we'll discuss this in the coming weeks, because it's a very fascinating sugi. But if the candles go out after you lit them, so his opinion was you have to relight them. So why does that mean you shouldn't use weak lights? Because, as Rashi explains, if you're going to use a weak candle, so then the chances are good that it will go out. And since zakukwa, since you're obligated to relight it, says Rashi, zakukwa takna, hilkach tzarach achila sos yafet dilma pasha v'lomatakimwa. That if it goes out, you're going to have to relight it. And we're worried that you'll mess up on that, that you won't do what you need to fix it, so you'll have a problem. So avoid the situation by having strong wicks and candles, so you're not going to be likely to be confronted with candles that are extinguished. And mutter l'shtamish la'ora. So how does that got anything to do with this? Because now we're talking about why you shouldn't use these candles on Shabbos. That since you could use these for your own personal benefit, so then we're worried. Hilchah says Rashi, Hilchah b'Shabbos aser shema yatil tzarech tashmish. That since you're allowed to use the candles, so maybe you're going to want to do that on Shabbos, and the flame's going to be very weak, so you're going to be tempted to tilt the candle to see better, and that's going to be a malacha. That's going to be a havara. You're going to create a greater flame on the wicks. That's going to be a malacha, so we don't want that. So we have a different reason for the weekday and for Shabbos, but both of them have issues. We should therefore should not use Shvach candles for Hanukkah, whether during the week or on Shabbos. Tamir?
Isn't that two Sesharot?
Yes, it's there, looks there. Right. It's a great question. So God willing, if we'll talk about the sugya of Kavsa, so maybe we'll come to that. So today, in our brief time, we won't focus on that, but maybe we'll come to that in future Sundays. So that's the opinion of Rav Huna. And Rav Chista says, no, Rav Chista says the other way, Madlikin, or partially the other way, Madlikin behem b'chol, you can use them during the week, Aval lo b'Shabbos. Shabbos, you can't use them, but during the week you can use them. Why? So it's a split difference. Kasavar, kavsa, ein zakukla. If they go out, it's not your problem, as long as you lit them in the first place. So therefore, during the week, we're not worried about that issue. But still, mutter l'shtamish l'ora, you're allowed to use them. So on Shabbos, we're still concerned that you may come to tilt the candle. Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Masta, Amar Rav Zeira, Merav, Silos Hashmona, Shalom Chachamim, Ein Madlikim Behem B'Shabbos, Madlikim Behem B'Chanukah, Bein B'Chol, Bein B'Shabbos. He says you can use them on Chanukah, both during the week and on Shabbos. So Amar Rav Yirmiya, we're now on the top of the page, by the way. Amar Rav Yirmiya, my Taima, what's the reason for this? My Taima, the Rav, Kasavar, Kavsa, Ein Zalkot La, he holds that you don't have to relate it. Therefore, he's not worried about it going out during the week. And asur lishtamesh la'arav. And you're not allowed to use it, so therefore we're not worried you're going to come to tilt it on Friday night because you're not allowed to use it in the first place. The Gemara has a fascinating line here, which is a lot to talk about, but it'll take us a little bit far afield, so we won't continue to read the Gemara now. Maybe we'll come back to the rest of the discussion here. But essentially, after this back and forth, so we really hold like the last opinion, the Kula and the Chumra, that on the one hand, during the week, if it goes out, we're not obligated to relight it, which is a fascinating sugya. Maybe we'll talk about that next week. We'll see, time permitting. But also we hold also the Hishtam Nishlar, that we're not allowed to use the Hanukkah candles. So let's just talk for a few minutes. Why are we not allowed to use the Hanukkah candles? So you find somewhere between 3 and 6 reasons in the Rishon. Because it depends whether you want to group them together or not. So you could probably make, say, 3 pairs of reasons. Each one, the 2 reasons might be the same, but they might be different. So, for example, first pair of reasons, if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi says, also l'shtamish la'ora, why? She'ehe nikr shehu ner mitzvah, and therefore lek l'mecha shalhataya. We're not worried they're going to come to tilt it, because we're not allowed to use it, she'ehe nikr shehu ner mitzvah. So we want it to be recognizable that it is a candle of mitzvah. Now that's a fascinating consideration, because just to call attention to the issue, why is it going to be nicker if you're not doing something? You know, if you want to have a hecker, so you do something. But here, how is this hecker going to come about? Because you're going to sit there the whole time and have people watch you and make sure that you don't actually use the candles? It's a kind of a roundabout kind of process. If there's something that you were doing, so then that could serve as a sign. Right, but how does the observer know that you're not going to use it for yourself 5 minutes from now? And if we're relying on a hecker that comes just from somebody observing you round the clock and making sure that you don't use it for something else. So that's a little bit hard to understand. It could mean that later on the Gemara is going to say that we should put a shamish, we should put an extra candle, and that may or may not be related to this idea. So perhaps, I don't know if this is the answer, maybe that's what Rashi is getting at, that because you are not supposed to use the Hanukkah candles for yourself, so therefore we add an extra candle so that you can use, and that becomes the hecker. So they'll see that, oh, you lit these candles, and you lit an extra candle next to it for yourself, that shows you that these candles are near mitzvah and not near tashmish. I don't know if that's how to explain Rashi, and maybe that's relevant.
Hi. Could it be that since it's also the Shemesh Aura, people would not put it in a normal place, or be in a corner that you wouldn't normally use, and that would be the recognition?
So that's an interesting issue to bring up, because we'll see, I don't know if we'll get to this year, but that's radically changed over the years. So it used to be they lit outside, now they lit inside, and that could indeed have an impact on how this halacha plays out. But it's a complex question, just exactly how it interacts. So the Rush phrases this a little differently, and this is a part of what I mean when I say that you could read these as related mitzvot, so you could read as related reasons or as different reasons. So the Rush either says the same thing as Rashi in a different way or says a different reason. The Rush says that if somebody's going to see you using the Hanukkah candles, so Haroa Yomar L'Tzorach V'Udavim, somebody sees you doing this, they'll say, oh, that's why he lit the Hanukkah candles, because he needs light, he needs to use these candles, so he lit this fancy candelabra on his windowsill. So that might be the same thing as Rashi is saying, just explaining a little bit more how it's a relevant consideration, or in a negative way, or maybe it's a different idea, that not like Rashi that you want an active hecker, but that we're worried that you shouldn't negate the already default perception, which would have been that it's there for a sign, but once you use it, you will undermine that presentation, so that's why you shouldn't use it. So that's an example of what I mean. These 2 reasons, you can consider them the same, you consider them 2 different reasons, so that's coupling number 1. Coupling number 2, so there is an idea, a number of the Rishon, the Rashba, and others mention, that since the whole mitzvah of Hanukkah candles is to pattern after the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, therefore, Chazal made it like the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. mitzvahs. What? Since the whole point is the pattern after the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, so Chazal made our personal menorah, which we sometimes call a Chanukiah, in order to distinguish from the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, which also looked different, had only six branches. So our Chanukiah is patterned after the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore it should also be Asr L'Hishnan Mishlorah. So this was said first in some level by the Baal HaMor. Many of the Mishnayos reported the Baal HaMor. But the Baal HaMor says it differently. Actually, the Baal HaMor says that that will lead you to a different practical conclusion. It's a whole story we won't have time to get into right now. So it could be there's actually a difference between the Baal HaMor and the later Rishonim. And this is discussed in a Sefer Yuchim Olshin. Rashi Ben Lakewood has a beautiful Sefer on Hanukkah, has a Sefer on Pesach as well. Beautiful, beautiful essays. So he has an essay about this, where he discusses that the Rashba and those on his side and the Baal HaMor are actually a little bit different. That the Rashba is saying that we want our menorah to be like the menorah of Beis HaMikdash, so therefore Chazal said it should be also Bahanah. Well, what the Baal HaMor was really saying is that they made it like Hekdesh, that essentially they treat our modern day oil and wicks like the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning that it has the status of Hekdesh, and that therefore it can't be used for our personal benefit, and that perhaps is supported by a certain well-known Hanukkah based source. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Sorry?
Use the oil.
Oh, okay. That's one possibility. So I was thinking actually of Haneros Halalu. Haneros Halalu was also an interesting sugya because I don't know how much we give Haneros Halalu the kavod it's due. Haneros Halalu might be a very important part of the whole Hadakas Haneros process, but there's a line in there which is interesting because it says Haneros Halalu Kodesh. So is that literal? It means actually Kodesh? So that's interesting. Again, it also touches on the point that we're talking about a mitzvah d'rabbanan. It's interesting to declare Kodesh. And is that actually the case? So that could support this reading of the Baal HaMor, that essentially that's what Chazal did. They created this mitzvah of holy candles, and that's why it's also Bahana. It's also Bahana because it's Kodesh, like the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we're not allowed to use it. So again, whether you consider the Rashba or the Baal HaMor, you're saying the same thing or two different things. So that's our second.
What's the actual Rashba?
Actually, so if you look, actually, this is a little bit beyond our time scope, and we'll talk about this more. But the Baal HaMor for sure assumes that the scope of what kind of usage is prohibited ties into this. And it's a big machlokas in details as to what kind of usage you're allowed to do and not allowed to do. Now, there is another coupling, our final coupling, which actually has a basis in the Gemara in the next daf, which is would seem like it could have explained it by itself, that the Gemara talks about the concept of Bizui Mitzvah. If you had a chance to get a little bit further, you'll see this Gemara there. That's why, again, it's kedai for the preparations to read through the Gemara. So if you get to familiarize yourself with the two of the lot over here, you'll have a lot of background. So the Gemara says that there's a concept of Bizui Mitzvah, that you're disgracing the mitzvah if you use it for your personal benefit, and maybe that's relevant to prohibiting Hana from Neiros Hanukkah. Now, parenthetically, the Gemara there kind of challenges Neiros Halalu, because there the Gemara actually says, "L'chi Kedushi Yisbei." What, these Hanukkah candles, are they Kaddish? Are they holy? You find that they're not Kaddish. So that's something that also has to be figured out, but it sounds like from the Gemara, like it's not an issue of Kedusha, but it's an issue of Bizui Mitzvah. Now, we also find a sixth possibility, or a third possibility, depending on how you're counting, that there is a concept of huktzel mitzvaso. That huktzel mitzvaso means, we find this, for example, in Hilchos Sukkos, that, by lulav and by the sukkah, that when you have a mitzvah item that's designated for usage for a mitzvah, so then it's not right to divert that usage to anything else. So that could be the explanation also why the Hanukkah candles are not allowed for personal benefit. And here as well, you find some of the Rishonim explicitly consider these two ideas to be the same thing. That Huktzel Mitzvaso is Bizui Mitzvah, that if it's dedicated for a mitzvah purpose, to use it for your own purposes, that would be a disgrace to a mitzvah, while others see these two ideas as two separate concepts, the differences between them. So again, that's coupling number three, either one reason or two reasons, depending on whether or not you want to consider them to be the same. So it's interesting on this point, this is what I want to get to today, that this idea of hooks and mitzvaso and bizvay mitzvah, they're the same idea. So if you look, there's a Tosfos, I don't know if I have Shabbos is here, but you can take a look at this later, there's a Tosfos and Shabbos stuff, Mendalad and Mendalav, that talks about the difference between Ner Shabbos and Ner Chanukah, and it's worth seeing whether or not there is a prohibition in one case or both cases to benefit from the oil after the mitzvah is over. So basically the question is, what is the Huktzel mitzvah? So the idea that it's dedicated for a certain mitzvah purpose, so does that only apply during the time of the mitzvah, or does it apply even afterwards also? So just very quickly, Tosfos Mandal Madal says here about Shabbos candles, V'achar Shabbos Mutter, Filur Behuda. So you're, after Shabbos is over, you can use these candles. V'achinam Yitanu V'kaman, Gavminei Sukkah, also stop Ad Motzi Yonta V'achar. Now when it comes to Sukkah decorations, you can't use them on Sukkot, but after Sukkot is over, after the night of the mitzvah is over, you can use them. Aval baser hachi, after Sukkot, shari is permitted. So v'kashu l'ri. So l'ri asks the question, demai shna miner chanukah. What's the difference between this and ner chanukah? Detanya, because it's taught somewhere. What does tanya mean? So it seems like it should be a brisa, but it's not clear where this next line comes from. That's a major discussion. But the next line it quotes is, Kavah Lel Rishon, let's say your Hanukkah candles go out on the first night of Hanukkah, what happens to the oil afterwards? Mosif Olav B'Lel Beis U'Madlikbo. Then you add oil to it, the next night you light from that. Lel Ches, what if you keep going and now it's the 8th night of Hanukkah and there's no next night to use it for? Then also Madur of Ne'atzmo, then you make it into a bonfire by itself and you just burn all that. And in other words, don't use it for your own personal benefit. Because it is dedicated to a mitzvah. So this, first of all, where it comes from, this Titania is a little bit confusing because other Rishonim quote this from the Shiltas of Achaigon, from a Gaonic source, a late Gaonic source, early Rishon source. And debate whether or not it's true. Whether or not the din is true is actually Machlokas Rishonim. Right, because again, you see, this is different than other mitzvahs. When it comes to sukkahs, you can't use the sukkah or the mitzvah items during sukkahs, but you can use them after sukkahs. And here we're saying Chanukah is more chomer. Not only can you not use the candles during Chanukah, but after Chanukah is over, you have to destroy the oil. You can't use it for any other purpose, even after the zman of the mitzvah. So is that true or not? Halacha, that's a big machlokas rishonim, and we'll talk about it at a different time. But where this whole quotation comes from is subject to discussion. Others quoted from the Shiltas, but it's also a Medrash Tanchuma. So the Medrash Tanchuma has this line, this idea that you should keep using the oil the next night and then burn it all at the end. And then, seemingly totally randomly, the Medrash goes on to say that maybe a person might say, okay, I don't have to listen to Mitzvah Sekenyan, I don't have to follow the Dinim Drabanan. So you should know, it's not true, you have to. The language actually is, the language says, came from Mitzvah al Shastamish Menu, Lo Yomer Adam Einim Makayim Mitzvah Sekenim, Ho of Einim in the Torah. A person shouldn't say, I'm not going to listen to the Din of the Rabbanan since they're not in the Torah. Amr Lehem Akarish Baruch Lebanai Einatem Bashoi Lomar Kach Ela Koma Shagozim Alechim Tiyu Makayimim. No, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, don't say that. Whatever the Chazal instruct, you have to fulfill. Shenamar v'asis al piyatorah shi'arucha. So, lama sha'afal devreim ani maskim. So that shows that I agree with what they say. Shenamar v'tigzu amar v'yakubah. Okay? So it's a very striking transfer from one sentence to the next. Right? The transition going from the first sentence says that don't use the oil from Neres Hanukkah. Oh, and by the way, don't ever think you don't have to listen to Din of the Rabbanan. And God says, I back it up. So what does one have to do with the other? So Joseph Engel writes, in the Sefer Asim Daraisim, and this connects to what we started with, which is why I wanted to bring this up here in our Sanhedrin context. So there is a big machlokes achronim in this point that we've mentioned in the past, that many achronim believe that there's a fundamental difference between a din derabanan and a din deres. That since a din derabanan is all about not rebelling against Chazal, so therefore you have to follow their instructions, you have to follow rabbinic authority, but it doesn't become a part of the Torah itself. It doesn't have inherent significance. So if you eat something that's treif from HaTorah, so that's considered to be inherently dangerous, inherently spiritually dangerous. But if it's only not kosher midrabanan, so that's a whole different level. Then the object is neutral, it's just we're commanded to avoid it. But Rav Yosef Engel disagrees with that. He thinks that, yes, as much as all the achronim say like that, it's mostly based on the comments of the Nesivos HaMishpat, says Rav Yosef Engel, I don't think that's true. I think that dinim derabanan have the status like a deraisa, like it's the same thing as part of the Torah itself. Why? Because once Chazal make their mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu signs off on it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu endorses it. So now it's basically incorporated into the status of the Torah itself. It says that's what this Medrash is telling us. That Hotzel Mitzvasa, what does that mean? It means that something that is dedicated for a mitzvah purpose takes on a certain status. So you might say, well, that's true for mitzvah daraisa, because the mitzvah daraisa has an inherent status. So therefore, the mitzvah takes on this personal identity. But a mitzvah derabanan, the object is neutral. We are told to behave a certain way, but the object doesn't have any personal identity. So the Medrash comes to tell us, no, it's not true. Even the halacha like chutzul mitzvaso, which should not apply at level derabanan according to that, we see does apply even to Hanukkah candles, and that's the point. Don't say I can ignore mitzvahs to Rabbanu, they're not from the Torah. God says, no, you see, I backed them up. That Hare Ani Maskimach, I support them, and therefore they're treated the same way like I did in the Torah, and a status like Huxel Mitzvah could apply to them as well. So it's a fascinating interpretation. And again, these are some points that we've seen today in Halachas Hanukkah that place some of the issues of Hanukkah squarely within the whole discussion of how rabbinic authority manifests itself. I just thought the context of our Sanhedrin issues, this was a helpful selection to consider as far as it enhances our understanding of some of that. Okay, so we're going to go over time, so we'll stop here. Again, no schedule for tomorrow.